Let's get out to the Banner Brothers hotline and welcome in our next guest, the director of broadcast media, and of course, the voice of the Cougars on the BYU Sports Network and BYU Athletics, the one, the only, Greg Wrubell, the Canuck of the Cougars. What's up, Greg? How you doing?
What's up, Ben? I'm well. So is Dustin sticking around, or is he going?
I'm here for you.
Yes,
hey,
you want to
he's
sticking around.
Go ahead, Greg. I know you got a lot to say.
No, so it's Ben and the D-line, is that right, with Dustin and Darnell?
You know, the guy that you know, Greg, you're always good at putting the words that I would like to say out on air. So, yes, the D-line is here.
Greg, I was thinking...
I know Dustin's an offensive lineman, but we got to go D-line with a couple Ds in the studio there, so we'll go with that.
Greg, I was thinking of you today because Ben had asked me about Band of the Day. I ended up choosing Rush.
Yes!
Well, it's Canada Day weekend, so Canada Day is tomorrow. Canada Day, July 1st, precedes the 4th of July, of course, so it's a big holiday weekend, people like myself, where we can say we grew up in Canada, live in the States, love both countries, and get to celebrate two national holidays.
What did you just ask him, Dustin?
What do you have to celebrate?
Really?
I really watched this video the other day. It's the guy's in the backyard, this old kind of dude's all in camo, and he's looking over his fence, and the guy's got a flag, a Canada flag, and you know, he's just got all this stuff, and he asks him, what do you have to celebrate?
So
and
great.
The guy goes off on this list of just all the things that Canada has that's better than the U.S. It was kind of funny.
What makes Canada so great?
I don't want to say better than. I just want to say that growing up in Canada was a blessing, and I wouldn't trade my upbringing for anything. I loved my formative years north of the border. As much as I love being in Utah and living here in the States, I think growing up there was just awesome. I look back on those days with such fondness, and I miss it greatly, but I'm glad to be here too.
I enjoy Vancouver when I go up there. It's a good time.
Beautiful, beautiful city.
Yeah. Whistler was one of my favorite. It's now officially one of my favorite ski resorts. Whistler was gorgeous. I don't know. I imagine you've been up there to Whistler, correct, Greg?
I've not skied Whistler Blackcomb, but it's legendary for good reasons. There's a lot of good skiing in Alberta, and I enjoyed that. But Vancouver and BC is just gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, we are very appreciative of you and your time. Thanks for joining us, the voice of the Cougars. Greg, it's the off season. I've been seeing more tweets coming from you on Twitter. That means football season is not too far away. What are some of the themes this off season that you'll be hitting on? You'll be focusing on regarding this BYU football team.
Yeah, I've taken my last vacation time. I'll have a little 4-day weekend here with the holidays, but other than that, we're kind of hitting it hard already. And if there's a theme, I think it's continuity and confidence right now. That's the sense I got from the staff and players, especially at Media Day last week. And I just look for that 9-win freshman year for the staff to be a real springboard to great things in 2017. And there's reason to believe it. Now, there are areas on the team that need to gain valuable experience in a hurry. If you take away the offensive line, not that you take it away, but the offensive line is the most experienced group on the team. Every other group surrounding the O-line are the least experienced position groups on the team. After the O-line, most of the experience in terms of starts goes to the defensive side of the ball. Then you come back to the offense and you find the less experienced quarterbacks, tight ends, backs, and receivers. Now, of that group, the QB starts are valuable. I mean, those 13 starts for Tanner Mangum do mean something, and that's a big leg up coming into his junior year. But they really need to coalesce and really gel around that offensive line core with those 84 career starts. You hope those pay off, especially since you're returning fewer faces with a lot of snaps on the offensive side of the ball.
Greg, the offensive line, it's been a while since it's been the strength of the BYU football team, at least on the offensive side of the ball. What's going to make this particular unit different than the ones maybe in the independent era that didn't have as much success as some are thinking this offensive line will have this year?
Well, Dustin's probably more qualified to speak to it. I do know that had Louis Lapuaho not suffered the situation he's got with his lower extremities there, I mean, how much better would we be right now, thinking about the season to come with Louis in the fold? That's a real shame to not have him. And I think it's too soon to call it quits for good, but it doesn't look great right now. And you hope the best. Maybe some kind of recovery occurs and he plays some more, but not expecting him this year, of course. And that's just too bad because I was really kind of counting on the three Musketeers kind of carrying this thing for three seasons with T-John and Tooney and Louis, and it's not going to happen at least this season. But there are snaps there, and the players back earned those snaps they've got, and I think it's not too unreasonable to expect Coach Empey to come out of August with the feeling that he's got, too deep across the line. And not every season can you say you're as confident in the number two guy as you are in the number one guy. There's a reason the guy is number one. But that said, you want to feel like you can throw 10 out there, and maybe they're to that point this season. I guess I'm intrigued, since I haven't seen Taipe Vaca, to see what he brings, the JUCO transfer. I wish Jacob Jimenez hadn't suffered that terrible injury in the spring. That's another guy. You take away Jimenez and Lapu'aho, that really does ding your depth a little bit. That said, I think the pieces are there. And whether it's the unknown guys like Vaca or Longson, who we know has been around, I'm curious to see who emerges to create a solid two deep and 10 across the line.
Greg, you mentioned confidence, and the vibe I got at Media Day and kind of as we follow this team is sort of a relaxed confidence. It's not false bravado. It's not we have a chip on our shoulder trying to prove something. They just seem to be really focused and really comfortable with where this program is headed and what their coaching staff is doing. Do you get that same sense from the players and coaches?
I do, and in part because of what they got out of last year. They got 9 wins with 4 losses from 8 total points from a new head coach, first-timer, new offensive coordinator, first-timer, new defensive coordinator, first-timer, and all these guys working with new players they hadn't worked with before. From what they got out of last year with the schedule they had, I think everyone felt like the right guys are in the right places. And again, not a real bravado and no one respects just that kind of thing. Just a quiet vibe about this is going to be a good group, and it really helps when you can look to the defensive side of the ball as kind of an anchor of your unit. And as aggressive as Coach Tuiaki's team was last year, the number of plays that were made on the defensive side, I think if the defense were to carry the team, quote-unquote, they'd feel comfortable. Ty Detmer showed that he could take a lot of time, not have to run a ton of plays, and then still move the chains steadily and get the results they needed. This was a team that ranked really well in the red zone, ranked really well in terms of ball control, ranked really well in moving the chains on third downs. And if you're looking at a lot of novelty from players and coaches, if you can be top 20 as they were in all 3 of those categories, that's a pretty good sign that you've got the right guys in the right places from a tactical standpoint. You do what it takes to win. And then when you see how the team is developing both sides of the line, I think you see where this program is intending to go. And the strength of the Utah teams up the road were really built in the trenches, and I think that's what you're seeing already happen with Coach Tuiaki and Coach Satake and Coach Empey. And then there is yet, the minds at work like Ed Lamb and Ty Detmer from a tactical standpoint. So I think all these things in years to come are really going to combine, for a pretty tasty recipe for BYU fans. I look at the D line. You mentioned the O line a bit ago and kind of being a strength of the team. I see 23 defensive lineman names on this roster. That's a big number. Mm-hmm. That is the number. That's the highest number of any position group right now. And Coach Tuiaki told me last week that's by design. That's where we need to be deepest and strongest in the 4-3. From just a couple of years ago to now, I think that defensive line has added just not names and not just numbers, but talented dudes that I think are going to somewhat help to approximate what Utah's been doing a few miles up north for the last few years. That's really been the strength of their team. And when you take Tuiaki and Satake from that same developmental mindset, you're starting to see that bear fruit down here in Provo.
Coach, what I also see is when I went down there, my son was down there in the camp a couple weeks back, and there's a sense, going and being around the staff and seeing kind of the swagger, but also the openness. That Kalani and his staff are there with the kids. I know this is an opportunity to recruit, but they're there talking to the parents, and I sense that, and I kind of put that in relationship with where you're seeing some of these transfers come from. That this is not a shut door program. Kalani has made this a very open door, welcoming brotherhood that isn't forced. That when you go down there and you talk to him, I think I spent like 45 minutes talking to him and a buddy of mine that was a roommate that knew him from high school during the camp, and it was just, it was just cool. And I think that's a change in I think comfort and continuity between the staff, between the players, between the relationship between fans. And I think that the whole vibe down there is reflective on their, that kind of confidence, that swagger that's happening in these guys. I think it's kind of, I'm picturing that it's kind of creating this little bit of a steamroll of, you know, of confidence in the way that things are going to continue to go this season.
Recruiting momentum is right with that. Whether it's high school kids or JUCO guys or the 4-year guys or their families, you really sense a momentum right now and kind of this magnetism toward the program. And,
yeah, that's a good word for it.
Yeah, they don't carry the P5 label, but anytime you get a kid or his family on campus, you can pretty closely replicate the P5 experience at BYU. Yeah. Paycheck aside, again, we'll let the accountants take care of that side of the equation. But again, the annual windfall aside, BYU does not lack for much from a perspective standpoint, from a facility standpoint, from an exposure standpoint, from a media agreement standpoint, let's just point to the Director's Cup standings coming up yesterday. There are 65 P5 programs in this country, and BYU outranks more than half of them, outranks 35 of them in terms of overall program strength. You can count 20 sports in those Director's Cup standings, and you rank it all up, and there's BYU sitting 31st in the nation out of some 250 teams that earned points this past fall, winter, and spring. And again, of 65 P5s, you're outranking 35 of them. So you're right in the mix in all the ways you have to be prominent. And again, the money aside, and the money matters, let's not disregard the fact that fiscal matters are a real thing. But if you have to be playing on a somewhat less level playing field, you'd rather be doing it nowhere but BYU right now. And again, we're back to a football conversation here and how it relates to Kalani and what he's doing, but you do sense the momentum with this program. And a lot of players are not being dissuaded by a label right now. They're being persuaded by the man and the program. And I was at a dinner this week at which Kalani and Ty spoke, and I can't, reinforce enough the sense you get when Kalani takes a podium and starts talking to his people, his fans, his supporters. It is such a comforting and natural feeling, and he is a, Lavelle was his mentor, and a lot of the same qualities Lavelle possessed are what Kalani brings to the table innately. It's not having to be produced or manufactured. It's just who he is. And you really can't succeed in the recruiting game, I don't think, at the highest level, unless it's part of who you are, unless that ability and that desire to connect and embrace is really part of your personality and your being. And that's really what you get from Kalani Sitake.
Greg, I wanted to get your opinion and thoughts on the way the BYU men's basketball roster is coming together this summer. Dave Rose and his staff going a little bit different direction than they've gone in the past, bringing in some players from the South, some JUCO guys. How do you see this, how it's come together this summer with this roster, and kind of forecast a little bit for us if you could?
You lose a really impressive player in Eric Mika, but I think the overall gain is a net gain for BYU. From the players off to the players on, from last year's roster to this, I think for different reasons you see a net gain because you lose, Kyle Davis wasn't able to be the player he wanted to be due to injury. LJ Rose wasn't able to be the player he wanted to be necessarily due to injury. Colby Lafson and Stephen Bayo and Zach Frampton were of the non-scholarship type, two of which ended up with scholarships. And you lose Jamal Lates, an injury situation again, and Davin Gwynn, a non-scholarship player who earned a scholarship but is now focusing scholastically. So that's the group you lose. You bring in and return Zach Selyus and three return missionaries. Among the most promising, would probably, because of his height, is Ryan Andrus, but Dalton Nixon isn't to be overlooked, and Luke Worthington looks smaller now, but is certainly going to give himself a chance to do something as a reserve at BYU. And then it's the Bergerson, Hardnett, and KB additions. I think you throw all those things together, the positions they play, the attributes they bring, and I don't think it's unreasonable to say the trade-off, the seven gone to the seven back, could be a possible net gain, even though Eric Mika is a huge part of the loss. I mean, you don't replace that kind of skill down low. He's extremely skilled and very valuable, and BYU would have loved to have him for some more time. That said, this gives them a chance and an opportunity to refine and revise their offensive approach, and it could be a more effective approach. As I've said before, guys, BYU was an effective two-point field goal team, an effective post-up team, but not as efficient an offensive team overall. And I think the change in personnel will lead to a change in approach. I think it'll be very obvious and very soon and very quickly to people how this team has changed and how they will play differently on offense. And I think they're all intriguing and encouraging and exciting changes. And the players that have been brought in are the kinds of guys you would want to have to run this system. So I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, I am too, actually. The Schroyer effect, I can already feel it tingling. There's a burning, and I'm excited for it. Greg, one last question for you regarding KB. Where does he fit into the mix? What role will he specifically play, according to your knowledge?
Well, he'll be a guy that can get to the rim. And at 6'5", I met him yesterday, and I've had to think 6'5 is probably right around where he is, 6'5", 6'6". Probably a defensive presence. I would think somebody that gets assignments that demand a length and quickness that he can provide. Some of his high school film is a couple of years old, but wow, you don't see hops like that every day at BYU. He's incredibly bouncy, and I'm just excited to see that put to work in whatever way they choose to use him. And I think right now so many things are just on the table, like starters minutes and reserve minutes, all that stuff's going to come. But I sense a real flexibility and versatility with this lineup. I see shooters all over the floor. I see guys playing multiple positions. You can't pigeonhole one guy into a spot on the floor like you maybe could with previous iterations. I think it's going to be a very challenging team to have to defend for teams in the West Coast Conference and elsewhere. And I'm just, again, super excited to see it all come to fruition, because the different players and the new coaching insight and the new coaching approach is going to make this team look different than the one we saw to end the season against Arlington at the Marriott Center. There's no doubt about that. A lot of folks are going to have their eyes opened really quickly as to what new-look BYU basketball really does appear to be.
Well, you're making me more optimistic, even if Darnell's not all that optimistic. I saw you, Darnell.
It's okay. It's okay to be circumspect, because you lose a guy to probably the professional ranks somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more about approach and adaptation that will give BYU, I think, maybe a better chance to succeed overall. And again, circumspection is fine until the results are on the floor. But I've heard Dave Rose speak to campers this last couple of weeks, and as Darnell knows, Dave's pretty upright and pretty forthcoming, and he's not been shy to share his optimism and his real belief that this could be an excellent basketball team this season. And I'm excited to see it again hit the floor, in late October, early November. We're going to have a ton of football to talk about between now and then, but it's okay to be excited about hoops too.
Yeah, Greg, I mean, the story of the stats, I think you tell that story the best. And what does a guard-heavy line that can shoot well look like historically for BYU basketball? Break that down for us.
Well, I don't think that BYU probably took or made nearly as many threes as they would have preferred to in a typical season last year. And I think by spacing and spreading and putting more shooters on the floor, you're going to see those numbers, more approximate what a Dave Rose, 12-season resume would appear to be. Again, they were very post-dependent, and for good reason. Eric was effective. But I think this will allow a little more freedom for shots to come from different places, and players who might be considered inside players being able to drift outside and do some things farther away from the basket. Again, really challenge the opposing defenses to adapt to multiple shooters on the floor at all times, I think will be an imperative for this year's team.
The director of broadcast media for BYU Athletics and the voice of the Cougars on the BYU Sports Network, Greg Rebell. I call him the Canuck of the Cougars. We appreciate you. Great insight as always, Greg.
Great to be on with Ben Criddle and the D-line tonight. And I will talk to one or two or three of you at some point in the future. Thanks for having me on. Have a great Canada Day and 4th of July weekend.
Happy Canada Day, Greg. Rejoice.
Hey.
See ya.